The following is a Journey into Comics Network production.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen? It's the Podfather, Nate here. You are listening to the Journey into Comics Network Best of the Week Highlight Show. This has got highlights from all shows across the network this week. Sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Journey into Comics.
Brando, it's bitch-ass cold out, by the way.
It is bitch-ass cold in my game room right now.
Same in the comic room.
I think last 2 weeks ago I said something about lemonade on the nipples. Was that during the wrestling show? I don't remember. It was one of them.
I'm not sure, yeah.
But I definitely mentioned lemonade, making lemonade using my nipples, and I could definitely do that again tonight and maybe even have less pulp. I don't know. I've never done it. However, my friend, I was trying to type in the name Podbean.
Podbean.
Like today or yesterday. It was really cold outside. I was trying to show people when that, you know, right around the time that I created Game Addicts Podcast, there was another podcast that got created on Podbean called Random Game Addicts or Game Addicts. It's called gameaddicts.podbean.com. It's not us. It's like these kids that were in school.
Okay.
Using their cell phones. They did two episodes, and that's it. So, like, when I went to go make our own feed, you know, gameaddicts.podbean, I'm like, oh, that's already taken. And my heart sank. So that's why our brand is Game Addicts Podcast. Well, I was trying to show them, so I typed in gameaddicts.poodbean.
Poodbean. our friends at Podbean are not going to be happy with us that we called them Poodbean. They've rescinded our feature.
I want to thank our friends and our hosts at Podbean for featuring us this week on their app and on the website. It has been a pleasure to have been featured, and an honor. I mean, it's awesome because, you know, they've always done such great things for us when we needed them to, and the fact that, you know, we saw, you know, a significant bump in followers and also downloads and listens throughout the week. It has been such a ride to see it. And, you know, I can't wait to do it again someday, man. It was really cool.
It was very amazing. I want to say right out of the gate, if you are new to the Journey into Comics Network and, you know, maybe this is the first time you're listening to Journey into Comics, you found us during the feature, welcome to our network. We hope you find something across one of the 10 shows. Of course, if you're on the network here at journeyintocomics.com, don't forget to go to gameaddictspodcast.com to get Brando's other show. It is the alternate feed of the Journey into Comics Network, and they're always doing awesome shit over there. They just did the retrospective last week, and they've got some big plans this week because we just had the feature, Brando, but now you get to feature, Brando.
Yeah, I know, and you know, since it's only one show, we're technically only getting two episodes for the feature. It's the one that's already out that came out last week. And then, of course, this week on Thursday, you're getting a brand new episode. And that one is going to be called Farewell 2017, as me and Mike, you know, sit back and we look at some of the games that we've beaten, some of our favorite pickups throughout the year. And we look forward to some great games that are coming out in 2018. So not only do you get that episode, but the episode that's already up is, of course, one of our retrospective series, the Nintendo Entertainment System, the NES. We take a look back at the NES and talk about our favorite memories and some history of the NES. And it was one of my most anticipated episodes. I've been planning that episode for a long time. And before we even found out about the feature, it was actually originally going to be episode 50.
Yes, I remember that.
I wanted something big for 50. Instead, I ended up doing like the Game Boy like family for that, which is still, I mean, Nintendo. But I'm like, you know what? I'll save it for a few weeks and we'll do feature week. That'll be one of the feature week episodes going up for that. That way, if you're new, that's one of the first tastes you get is that NES episode. I mean, because everybody loves the NES, dude. If you're a gamer, especially if you're in our age group right around that, you know, late 20s, early 30s era, like, you definitely grew up, NES was there, so.
Hell yeah, man. It was my first system. I remember, I was actually watching your gaming pickups revisited too. And you got RC Pro-Am. It's one of my first games I ever played. That was an awesome moment to have you pull that out in the retrospective. I forgot you got that game. But yeah, that's one of the first games I ever played, that and the Ninja Turtles for NES. So that system definitely influenced me.
So the story that I shared, so the story that I shared about RC Pro-Am on that episode, I said I spent the night at my aunt and uncle's, and I was having a hard time. I was bawling my eyes out. I was really young. I was so young. And what it was is that I was supposed to stay with them for the night. And I don't remember what my parents were doing, where they were going. But I don't think I quite understood that I would be staying there alone with them. And I think what happened was they tried to sneak out because they were afraid that maybe a goodbye would be too hard for me.
Oh,
you know, like, you know, kind of like, oh man, well, if we just, he's busy, he's playing, he's doing this, if he doesn't realize that we're gone, you know, he won't react. Well, when I realized they were gone, I was so upset that they didn't say bye that I thought they left me there.
Oh shit.
So I cried for about 17 hours.
Holy hell. Which
is probably only about 40 minutes, but it felt so long. So to the point where I like wet myself and everything. And then, so, you know, my aunt had to give me a bath and all that kind of stuff. And then after the bath is when, she took me into my cousin's rooms and like, hey, you know, let him watch you guys play, maybe let him play a little bit. And it was RC Pro-Am.
Awesome. And of course, gets a race in that game, oil slicks and the like. It's super memorable. Yes, absolutely. Brando, we should kind of maybe talk about some of the stuff we mean to talk about today. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, I mean, we've got like a little bit of a list of things that we want to try and hit on this week. And I think we really should probably start hitting those instead of just chit-chatting about whatever we're talking about.
I just don't want you to freeze your tiny little nipples off, and maybe they go to France.
Dude, my nipples are already, dude, they're already off. They're on the floor right now. They've already, like, they're rolling, you know, rolling away.
You know what's really weird is you just said that they were off, rolling away, and I thought about Cousin It from the Addams Family, and then, of course, it was Cousin Tit.
Dude, Wyatt's hair today... you know, his hair is so long that sometimes Kate puts it up in like a man bun type thing.
Yeah.
And then so when she put it down earlier, his hair was like all disheveled and all over the place. He looked like Cousin It. So I called him Cousin It.
He's got a lot of hair, man.
Dude, he does.
Damn.
He absolutely does.
Well, Brando, I want to bring this up to you because this was like a really interesting thing I just found out today, actually. Mark Hamill has been, I don't know if it is a rumor, it is a conjecture that people want to see this happen, and I want to get your opinion on it. I don't know if you know about this or not. People want Mark Hamill to play Doc Ock in the MCU.
What?
Yes, I think it's a phenomenal casting.
Doc Ock and not Hobgoblin, like he played in the...
Yeah, totally. Like, he's already played a Hobgoblin. He doesn't need to do it again. He needs to do something different. And how cool would it be to have him be the science-y type guy, and it's a different take on the foe of Doc Ock? He can play crazy and menacing. He does a great job anytime he's in any superhero role. Obviously, he can toe a line there with some of his Joker stuff. I think it would be brilliant if that's the route they decide to go. However, if I'm looking at a Spider-Man trilogy with Tom Holland and what they should do, and of course they just did, the Vulture story, I think Mysterio has to be next. I think that's the most sensible thing. We've not seen a Mysterio. There's a lot of cool storytelling that can be done with a magician-type-esque villain and all the kind of smoke and mirrors that can bring. You can obviously introduce some Gwen Stacy and stuff, and then maybe in your end of your trilogy, have the Green Goblin take out your Gwen Stacy character. you know, possibly.
You've been barking up this Mysterio tree for years.
God damn it, I want to see him in the movie so bad. His fishbowl has to make an appearance.
Man, you have been, like, championing this thing. Like, I don't disagree with you. I would love to see Mysterio realized on the big screen.
They gave us a loose fucking shocker. Like, I wouldn't expect them to give us any kind of a shocker. That sounds bad, but...
loose shocker. They gave us a loose shocker.
Oh, shit. That sounded so bad. Of course, Herman Schultz's first appearance in Amazing Spider-Man 46. He's one of my favorites.
There was also some interesting moments. The Cecil DeMille Award went to Oprah Winfrey, and they kind of showed a montage of kind of a highlight of her life from the Oprah Winfrey show, from her newscasting days, from moving beyond that to like the O Network and the magazine, and her parts in movies like The Color Purple and like The Butler and all of that. So, and then she gave a great speech, and they talked about her part in the upcoming movie The Wrinkle in Time. So. She gave a really fantastic speech and led a lot of people saying at the end of it, Oprah Winfrey for president, which is an interesting statement. And not to say that she doesn't have the draw or the audience or the experience talking in front of crowds to be a public face of the United States, but I think we're kind of on a slippery slope. I mean, if a businessman... television star can get elected president, then a businesswoman television star can also in theory get elected president. But I think it's time maybe to take a step back and go back to the senators, the congressmen, the lawyers, the military men and women, give them opportunity to become president. I think we should avoid going back, keeping with these entertainment personalities, regardless of their personality for what they hope to accomplish. I think we've seen when someone who's not the most qualified person gets in that role, it's quite a learning curve and something that we don't really get to see. We don't really get to see their accomplishments as easily, and we get to see that it's a lot more of a struggle for them than someone who has more of the intuition, has more of the political, governmental background that is really needed to do that job effectively and quickly. So, not saying that Oprah wouldn't be a good president. She could be fantastic. But I think we don't want a trend where the only people who get elected president are these very popular public personas. I mean, there was a time that I didn't know who this person was until they stepped up to a podium to run for president. I don't need these people that have been in and out of my life in some capacity in terms of being a face on a TV show or in a background of a movie. So that's just my two cents. I don't know if we need another trend of entertainment. And I think it would be a very interesting debate to see Oprah Winfrey versus a Donald Trump in a 2020 election. But I don't know. I think the United States deserves better and deserves someone to really push America forward. And I don't know if another personality, even someone as powerful and knowledgeable and a talent as Oprah, is that person. And I guess kind of moving forward from the world of movies and TV to more with what's going on in the U.S. and in the world of Trump. I actually saw this morning kind of as I was prepping the show, was that apparently there was a fire at the Trump Tower in New York, which involved three injuries, one from a firefighter, one from a worker who was trying to put out the fire, and then one from some unidentified person. It looks like it was just a part of the heating and ventilation system, had a small fire, and it was memed a lot. Like, I saw someone post, with someone come, I think someone said, oh, does that mean Donald Trump has elected a new wife? Kind of similar to, you know, when at the Vatican, when the Pope dies, they release smoke to announce they're deciding, and different colored smoke to announce when they found that person. So That's what kind of what the meme was trying to go for. But I guess kind of moving on from that, something that really shook the president's ego and caused a lot of strife in the White House and in Washington was a book that was coming out recently by Michael Wolff called Fire and Fury Inside the Trump White House. And Fire and Fury is a common quote that I used in, I think, my second or third episode regarding Trump's response to North Korea, saying, like, if they do something, we will bring down the fire and fury unlike anything you've ever seen. So then we kind of go forward from that to this book about Mike Wolff, who's this reporter and author who basically was a fly on the wall for 9 months of the Trump presidency, since right before he was elected until later this past year. And this book brought a lot of ire. Trump was quick to denounce it, saying this was pure fiction and fake news, and I never authorized this. He didn't have the access he claims he had. This also caused a major fallout between Donald Trump and Steve Bannon regarding a lot of the stuff he said. And this led to just a lot of the RNC and everyone else quickly denouncing this book. And usually if this book was full of absolute lies, it could easily be done a cease and desist or some kind of legal means to prevent something like this from coming out. But seeing as the book was able to come out fairly easily and was been a pretty big seller, I know when I was trying to look for it, it was sold on Amazon for a few weeks, it was sold on Barnes & Noble for a few weeks, so I ended up picking up the Audible version, so I have the audiobook and actually listened to the up through the first chapter before this episode. And it's actually a very interesting read. Only kind of weird thing about the book is that during the author's notes at the beginning, he mentions that some of the reports he has are conflicting, and he sometimes allowed people to tell their own side of the story and let us as the listener or the reader decide on what the fact is. And that's kind of weird for me. I understand what he's kind of saying. He's like, this is what I got. I'm just passing along that information. But I don't want to read a book. It's not a book that I'm like not choosing my own adventure. I kind of want a book where I get to get as much factual information as possible. I don't want to get three differing stories and have to assume which one is right. So that's my only real beef with the book so far. Book's fairly interesting. The first chapter's a lot about the campaign leading up to Election Day, with how everyone assumed Trump wasn't going to win. That this was all more of an act or an exercise to place people in a more public space and lead them to better things. Like, Steve Bannon was doing it to get more notoriety and more success and become like the new head of this, like the Tea Party movement. Kellyanne Conway, Trump's campaign manager, was using it to get an anchor site on a news show. Trump was doing this to kind of push him up into the upper echelons and give him a platform. It actually says in the book about him wanting to start his own news network. Like, from talking to his friends like Roger Ailes and Rupert Murdoch about wanting a Fox News type show and something like a TNN, like a Trump news network, which would have been interesting. And how in the book talks about how Trump's wife Melania was fearful that he was going to win and what it would do to her pretty sheltered life. She lives in New York with her son. And Trump's reassurances that he wasn't going to win and life would go back to normal. And even goes to talk about how things were the day of when it looked likely that Trump was going to win, and how there's a lot of disbelief from Trump himself, who went from like disbelief to fear to just confusion, not knowing how to respond, because it seemed like this wasn't something the Trump campaign wanted at all. They wanted to almost win. They wanted to get to a point where they could say, wow, we went from nothing to something. They didn't want they wanted a great campaign. They didn't want a presidency.
Do everybody's attention now.
Because the new champion is it was Tim Storm, but he lost the title. I don't know who Tim Storm is or was, or he was like they were hyping him up to be like this he's an older he's an older dude that never really got his big break kind of guy. Because he was the oldest winner of the belt. He was 51 when he won the belt, and he held it for 163 belts. Or 163 days.
He held it for 163 belts. 163 belts is the episode title.
So the current champion is Nick Aldis.
Nick Aldis.
He is called Magnus.
Oh, okay.
So, the NWA property is very difficult to build that into something, because to me that's even lower than Impact Wrestling, because they have to rely on other promotions to help utilize it. It was Jeff Jarrett tried to make Global Force Wrestling that. I don't think there's a market for that. I think you have to make a promotion, you know, base it out of somewhere and build a new NWA promotion.
Yep.
The NWA was never a promotion. It was a series of promotions that, you know, the NWA name would just be associated with. I don't think that style is suitable anymore, and they need to do that. Magnus is a great guy to start that with. He's a fantastic wrestler. I think he's heavily underutilized. I really wish he would go to WWE, Ring of Honor, New Japan, somewhere, and get more recognition, because I think he's amazing.
Yeah, he could totally be over anywhere. He's just not gotten his foot in the door in the right place. And maybe that'll be in his destiny now that he's done this run in NWA as their champ.
So guess who did get their foot in the door?
Who?
Samoa Joe, right into the door of the injured list. Samoa Joe is injured once again. Apparently wrestling Monday night, he felt a pop in his right foot. And he's like, ow. So then... they went to go look at
it. As one would.
Ouch. Yeah. Ow. So then he, you know, they're taking a look at it, and they think it's a rupture of the plantar fascia. Is that how you say it? Plantar fascia? Fascia?
Fascia. You had it right.
Fucking plantar fascist. You're a fascist planter.
Gardening with Hitler. Oh, that's awful.
He possibly ruptured that tendon, which could take a couple weeks to a couple months, depending on how long that takes. He may miss the Rumble, but he's not at scheduled to miss Mania, which sucks because, you know, I don't know what they're going to do with him for Mania anyway. When you have this many awesome guys on the card,
starts to get clogged.
I know, and then you end up putting people in the fucking battle royal, which should be something. It should mean more than what it does, you know.
Maybe that's the way to do it, though, Brando. Maybe have him return as a surprise entrant to the Andre the Giant Battle Memorial Rumble match. I can't talk, apparently.
You know what's funny?
And then have him actually win it.
You know what's funny? I was working with the dude. And we were talking about the recent conjecture into U.S. politics, and what possibly could be going down. And this guy, he's hilarious. And I'm gonna like mimic his speech impediment. He kind of has a lisp. I'm not making fun of the dude. I just think it's, this is his cadence, and it's like when he makes jokes, it's like it's funnier to hear it with the lisp.
Okay.
So then he goes. He just says something like, you know, I just think, you know, we're just in this space where people are just tired of people who are normally in politikics.
Politikics?
I lost it, dude. I was like, wait, what? Oh, shit. Well, that's what I get for trying to sound smart. Yeah, politics, yeah. So now politikics is my favorite new word. So, yeah, Joe is out on the injured list. It looks like Dean Ambrose is going to miss Mania altogether. He is going to be out for a while. The card for Mania, hasn't even begun to take shape yet, really. There are a couple of matches you can almost guarantee are going to happen.
Lesnar-Roman.
Huh?
Lesnar-Roman.
Lesnar-Roman's going to happen. Absolutely. H and Angle is probably going to happen.
Shane versus DB?
Well, as of right now, nothing they're doing is leading towards Daniel Bryan wrestling again.
Really?
I read there's even conjecture of them turning him heel just to cool him off before he leaves, because they think they're pretty sure that if they don't clear him to wrestle, that he will not resign. And he's going to want to go wrestle other places like New Japan or Ring of Honor or somewhere else. And they want to try and cool down his popularity before he leaves.
It's not going to work.
I totally agree. I think it's stupid.
It's going to backfire really badly for them.
I just kind of feel like we're in a bad place right now, because we're at a crossroads with this whole brain injury thing, right? Where we know more than we knew then, but we don't know as much as we could.
Yeah, and WWE is trying to protect the fuck out of Daniel Bryan, so there are no more lawsuits against them.
Well, they're trying to protect the fuck out of everybody. The steps that they have taken to help protect people since the untimely death of Chris Benoit, which can be argued is due to brain damage. And also Benoit's family. You can't forget that. But people are attributing it to his brain damage, saying that they're trying to justify it in that way. So maybe it is, maybe it wasn't, maybe he just went crazy. But they've been doing more and more and more and more to help try and protect, more than what some people else are doing. And them not letting Daniel Bryan back in and forcing him into retirement was to protect themselves, to protect Bryan. Now, Bryan wants to wrestle, and he's been told that he can.
And by every other doctor in the fucking world.
And if WWE is not going to let him, he's going to go wrestle, because he doesn't care.
Correct. He's a performer. But did you see there was a video from the Dark match on last week's SmackDown? Do you know about this?
No.
So there's a video of DB running the ropes with Sami Zayn, like, you know, crisscrossing each other in the ropes. Like, he looks the best shape he's ever looked. You know what I'm saying? Why they're doing this to this guy, it's just like, are you ridiculous right now, WWE? First of all, you fumbled and fucked up the whole thing with Punk, and now you're going to do a totally different kind of thing to a performer that's equally as fucked up. Like, what are you thinking? If he's been cleared by every other doctor that there's nothing to worry about, and he's been doing all this rehab and all these different steps and precautions to change his life and his health, like, if he's been fucking told he's good, he's good. Stop denying him, because he's going to go make money elsewhere, make a name for himself elsewhere, and you guys are going to be the ones that eat it.
I heard a rumor, now this is biggest grain of salt rumor, that there's a potential to do a Owens, Sammy versus Shane, Daniel Bryan at Mania.
That'd be interesting.
What other possible Mania matches? Cena Taker. I've been Cena all over.
Oh, same. Same. That take. Somebody said recently, Taker said he wasn't going to Raw just for a visit, that he was going there with purpose. So, now,
all right. So I read this article today on IGN basically saying why it needs to happen, right?
Sure.
And also defending the loss to Roman, because people are saying, well, if, you know, basically Undertaker passed the role of big dog in his yard to Roman, and that was the purpose of his thing last year.
Absolutely.
Cena was championing so hard. He wanted to be the guy to face Taker last year, because it seemed like, okay, this is it. No more, you know. Taker's going to go and have surgery, blah, 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 you know. I want to be the guy. I want that match. Cena even said during the feud with Miz was like, oh, you're just trying to pull the strings and get your match and all that kind of stuff. And Cena retorted, if I was doing that, I'd be wrestling The Undertaker, not you.
Yeah.
They're looking at that saying, how has that really helped Roman? And the answer is it hasn't. It never really – it got him some major heat right after, but that's definitely sizzled. And he's not writing off the fact that he beat Taker. He's not utilizing it. He's not – it hasn't really – he didn't win the title this year. It didn't really, like, elevate him to the next level like a win over The Undertaker should.
Before we get too far into this, I would like to introduce my other guest returning, and I would also like to officially announce Tyler McLaughlin as my co-host to Podcastrophy.
Hi, everybody.
he's not just our little podcasting pet that we can just drag along to any episode we need him on. He is now a host.
Co-host. Really happy to be back. Really happy to be here regularly.
Yeah.
Part of Podcastrophy. And ready to jump back into Judas Priest because Rob Halford, you know, my sister's dad, when I was a kid, introduced me to a lot of the music that I like now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're jamming out to Judas Priest or something one day, and he's like, did you know he's gay? You know, I'm like maybe 10 or 11 years old. So this was way before, you know, the gender fluid neutrality binary identification craze that we've been in for the last year and a half, which there's nothing wrong with that. But so I was like, well, it never really has mattered to me. But, you know, he's kind of an old timey dude. So he just, I mean, he blurted that out and I was like, no, Judas Priest is still badass. And he's like, yeah, of course he's badass. But he showed me this interview that Rob did, I think in the early to mid 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember if this was VH1 or who it was with, but, you know, it's just him behind the camera and they're just hammering him with questions. And they're like, well, how long have you been gay? Well, I've been gay my whole life. And the interviewer's like, fans don't believe that you're gay. And he's like, He gets very serious, and you know how he's always got sunglasses on.
Yeah.
He actually takes his sunglasses off, and he says, have you guys looked at the clothes that I've been wearing for like the last 10 years? Like, I have always been gay. It's a part of who I am. You either like my music or you don't. And that's part of the reason I like Rob Halford, is because, you know, number one, he's such a good musician, but he's so down to earth.
Yeah.
He just tells it like it is. He doesn't get, you know, he can have every interview that I've ever seen him do with anybody. You know, he's real casual. He's just, I mean, it's like this. We're just having conversation.
Well, you're right. And see, it's all about the idea of, like, your sexual orientation should not define you.
Absolutely.
You know, he is one of the most badass frontmen in the history of metal.
Absolutely.
You know, he's a grandfather. He's a pioneer,
mm-hmm,
of what you would consider heavy metal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have your Sabbaths, you have your Zeppelins that really created tone. Because you go back and you listen to early Priest. I mean, Sad Wings of Destiny, Priest, and it's not quite there as far as sound, but then you get British Steel, and then you get, you know, okay, so then there was the Turbo Lover craze, but there's also Screaming for Vengeance.
Right.
You know, and then there's Painkiller. Painkiller coming after something like Turbo Lover just kicks you right in the nuts, you know? And I still think that if someone were to ask me what is the perfect metal song ever, has it ever been written, the closest that I could probably ever say on the top of my head would be Painkiller.
I would.
It is so
90% agree with
balls
that.
Balls to the wall, badass, yeah, drumming, yeah, badass riffs, one of the most badass guitar solos, and it's like, motherfucker, you know what? Anybody tries to like scream and wail like he never stops in that song.
Mm-mm.
Like there's only like one point in the middle of the song where he lowers his register a little bit. Otherwise, he's like way up here, and it's like, Who can do that without getting a headache?
Well, Rob actually doesn't have to breathe. He just he pulls in oxygen from through his skin. Like his entire body is just one giant gill.
It's funny because the guy that replaced Rob Halford, Tim Ripper Owens,
mm-hmm.
there for a little while, he has a similar thing where he doesn't need to breathe. And it is like, it's so weird because you hear him on record holding notes and you're just like, how is he doing this?
Glass is shattering in the background, you know?
Dude, he can hold notes at such a octave and at length that it's like you're struggling if you're trying to sing along with him. To like you're running out of breath, dude. But he does it like without effort. So then you take like for example, like he also was in one of my favorite band of all time, Iced Earth. So you hear he did two albums with them, and you hear another singer do his stuff. Well, some of them struggle because they're not one singing at the same like level as he is as far as like, you know, for that the song requires.
Mm-hmm.
But like then like they're trying to hold these notes and it's like, well, like I would love to sing him like that, but I need to breathe.
Right. You know,
apparently Ripper doesn't. But anyway, yeah, dude. So what I'm going to do right here, right now is go through the top 10 most downloaded episodes on the Journey to Comics Network for the last 30 days.
Okay.
Number one, or should I start at number 10?
Start at number 10. Let's hear this.
Yeah, let's work number 10, down.
Drunkastrophe.
Oh.
Hey, but it's only been up there for a week.
Yeah, not even a week. A couple days.
A couple days. It's already number 10. So great. Number 9, Butt Stuff, Shenanigans.
Oh, God.
That was a good episode.
It was. You hear the hesitancy in my voice?
Yes. Yes. The things you learn.
Yeah.
And number 8, Bruise with Dudes. Number 7, The Dudette Abides.
Nice.
Number 7, Voice of Survival. 11, Mike Norris. So number 6 is Foodies Watching Movie, Season 2, Episode 8. Revenge of the Bacon Sludge.
I don't think I watched that one.
I
haven't listened to that one yet.
Number 5, Foodies Watching Movies, Season 2, Episode 9, Everyone's a Critic.
I did listen to that one.
Number 4, Best of the Week for the week of Christmas of 2017. So then we're coming up to the last 3. Number 3, Podcastrophe 17, POVR Porn.
It has such a catchy title, you know?
I know. Number 2.
Draws you in.
Journey into Comics 170, The Last Jedi.
That's number 1?
Number 2.
Oh, that's number 2.
Okay, so we actually have one and 2 are tied.
Oh, shit.
They have the same number of downloads because number 1 is the Journey into Comics 172, Nerds of the Roundtable 3.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Two really good episodes. I mean, they're all really good episodes on the top 10. I'm really, really proud of everything that what has become just in like 4 or 5 months. You know, when you get shows and you get them like lined up and, you know, you got to be that guy saying, all right, we got to get a schedule going on here. You almost got to play the administrative role. And then finally now, here we are coming into the new year where I can take a seat back, not have to worry about what you're doing or what, you know, poor boy is doing or what Joanna or what Kate and Joanna are doing. I can just let them go and then enjoy the content, you know, and then know that like everybody now is hopefully more comfortable with what they're doing.
Yeah.
Because that's the hardest part is finding your own voice.
Yeah, I can attest to that. I remember my early attempts.
Your infancy.
I am the ancient one here.
Yeah.
And I remember trying to make those videos and just I didn't know what to say. Like I would stumble over myself and between every word I'd.
Now, are these the original old videos?
Yes.
Okay. Have you played any of those on the podcast?
No, I haven't.
We need to at some point.
Are you about to get one rolling right now?
Well, now, is that going to feed into the actual recording of the show?
It might not.
Oh, okay.
I'm sure this is my subscription, not my channel. But yeah, I remember stumbling over myself. It was bad. I would talk in circles.
Mm-hmm.
forgive me, audience. My voice is quite horrid today. Oh my God, there's so much bullshit on my
YouTube.
Well,
you know, like when I started too, when I first was on Journey into Comics, dude, I was nervous as heck.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know exactly what to say. And I, you know, talked in circles too. You end up like repeating yourself mm-hmm. when you're trying to, and I still do that sometimes, you know, from time to time.
Good luck.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Game Addicts Podcast, the show where we talk about the modern and retro video games that we play and collect. I am your host, Brando. Joining me here today, as always, is this podcast player too, Mike.
Hello.
How is it going today, good sir?
It is going very well. Thank you for asking.
Oh man, of course we want to welcome you guys all to the show. If this is your first time, if you found the show via the feature week...
Yes.
You know, I want to welcome you. Basically, the premise of this show is very simple. Two guys get together, we talk about video games, whether it's the latest and greatest that's going on right now, or, you know, like we talk about stuff that we collect because, you know, we're retro gamers, we're modern gamers, we're kind of a mix and amalgamation of both. And today's show is kind of, we're going to focus on 2017, looking at what we've kind of, you know, some of our favorite pickups that we've had throughout the year. If you've been following the show, some of these are going to be familiar to you. And then, of course, we're going to be looking forward a bit to 2018 to see what games are new games are coming out, to see, you know, what's on the horizon. Some of these games are probably going to be delayed.
Punny.
We definitely have something to talk about that. But first, as we always touch on this first, newest pickups.
So, do you have any?
I do have some, but they're all digital.
Okay, so I have one physical.
Go for it.
So I picked up Axiom Verge, which is for the
physical copy.
Yes, physical copy, and this is, as anybody knows, is a Metroidvania game.
Mm-hmm.
I like it a lot. The only a few things that I don't like, and I believe that they are by design. So there are parts where you're climbing up said tunnel, and it's you're basically trapped in like a computer world. Essentially, is what I haven't beaten it. I'm about 50% map opened and 40% items collected mm-hmm. up to this point. So it's good. It's a really good game. It is definitely a very similar feel to Metroid. Very similar.
Now, this is an independent game.
Yes.
It was released originally digitally. Yes. I want to say it's out for Wii U, PS4, Xbox One, and of course now it's out for the Switch, and also I think it's for the Vita as well.
Yes.
The physical copies, you're looking at
Vita Switch.
And Switch, and if there were ones for the other one, or like PS, I don't know if there was a limited games version that was released. I don't think so. I want to say, okay, so this game has been on my map for a while because if anybody listens to the old Podcast Beyond or PS I Love You, shows, they talked about this game because the Vita version was promised for a long time, and even after the PS4 version came out, that the dude who was basically the head of this game was like, it's coming, we just, please wait, you know, and they were getting impatient.
Right.
So like they were talking about how long is it going to be. Well, finally we got that one, and we got the Switch version as well, and that was $30 for the
Yes.
For the physical copy.
Maybe the receipt's in here. No,
nope,
it's not.
It isn't. I'll be darned.
That's very rare.
Yeah, pretty uncommon for either of us.
So my dislikes of this, I think I went off on a tangent.
Okay, yeah, yes.
When you climb up, it becomes like blurry, and it the environment kind of wonks and glitches and pops.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll have parts where it disappears to black. Some sections will disappear to black and then come back. So that kind of bothers me, but it's by design. It's only in certain areas. I know that one's by design. The other one, so about 30% through the game,
it was, the sound was okay. And then I picked up a certain weapon and fired it. And now I have a constant buzz. Even when I restart the game, restart the system, I have a constant buzz. So I don't know if that's by design or maybe I just didn't notice it until I did the shot and it was very noticeable on the shot. But it's kind of, it's just a, like a computer buzz. So I assume it's by design. It makes sense for the setting. But outside of that, I give it like an 8.
Really good. So like,
so the big thing about it is that I got my grappling hook. Go figure. And your weapons are, each one you had to select a specific weapon. And there's, so far I think I've uncovered 6, I would like to say. And they're very, each one is very unique. And they have their own positives and negatives. But it's really neat that they did that instead of powering up your weapon. But they have little, you have like large icons that increase your weapon damage. And you have small data bits that you pick up. And those small data bits, you combine 6 for a weapon increase in damage and 5 for a health increase. So that's cool. So it really gives you like that Metroidvania feel where you always go through, pick up weapons, you increase your health, da-da-da. But I think it's a fantastic game. If you are any, if you like old style Metroid games, this is a must pick up. It has a, it has a unique story. I really enjoy it. And there's parts in the game where you pick up somebody that has been there before you. And he's kind of translated their language into English. But there's some data that you pull out that you can't understand. And I'm hoping that I get a another piece of a translator to uncover it. Because it's got a really good story. It's very bleak to begin with. Because you're kind of just like thrown in and he's like, what happened? Like, my factory exploded because of an experiment and now I'm here. So, it's neat. It's very unique.
Awesome. I mean, I've been wanting to pick that up for a while, and it was just to the point of when I bought my games, I just didn't have enough left over for it, and I told you about it, and you went and picked it up like the next, like that night.
No, we had talked about it before.
Like, but when I told you that what store had
it. Oh, yes, what store had the physical copy, I was on it, and then I was torn between the Vita or this one, and I was like, well, I need to go with the Switch because I don't have many games for the Switch.
Yeah. So. Well, and I mean, it's, to me, that's where a lot of my love is right now anyway. And I'm going to get there.
Yeah, we can. Well, I can see. Maybe the viewers can't see it, but I can see the love.
Well, okay. We're definitely going to get there. So, a lot of places, probably Steam. I'm not big and active on Steam anymore. But the PlayStation and the Xbox stores are having holiday sales right now. So you can get some really good deals on some games, even some newer games.
Right.
But even older games are like dirt cheap right now. And so last night I spent like $18.
Okay.
Okay. Number one, I had to buy a game for my wife, Caitlin, because she said that she wanted it because apparently her and your wife, Joanna, watched somebody play this game and they were dying laughing. It's called I Am Bread.
Yes.
So I Am Bread is on sale for on the PlayStation Network. As by the time you guys are seeing this, it's no longer on sale. Because I think the sale ends like tomorrow. But which we, like January 2nd. However, it was on sale for $1.94. And it's normally 15 bucks.
Huh.
So.
Have you ever seen gameplay for that?
I have.
It is unique.
I have definitely seen it. So I picked that up for $1.94. And then I picked up a game that I've been wanting to get for a while. It is a newer made indie game. And this game was available physically, but when I looked it up to see if I could buy it, physical copies are going for $100. So not going to happen.
No.
Not going to happen for me. So I bit the bullet. It was like normally priced at $15, and it was down to like $8, maybe $7.
Okay.
Maybe it might have been a little bit more than that. No, it was around $8. No, maybe it was $10. Maybe it was $9.99. Whatever, right? way cheaper than $100. Undertale. Have you ever heard of Undertale?
Huh.
It is a newer made 8-bit RPG. And it's unique as in the battle you have mini games where you have to try like, and it's hard to explain. It's almost like a puzzler within the RPG.
Huh.
It is very different. I haven't even fired it up yet because I bought it last night. But the last thing I got revolves Dragon Age Inquisition. Now, before this show even started, this won my personal game of the year for 2014 when it came out. In 2014, I thought this is the best game that year.
Yeah, it was a good game, for sure.
It won a lot of Game of the Year awards. And, of course, I am a Dragon Age fan. I really enjoyed and loved the first game. Of course, if anybody's ever played this, it's BioWare. It is very reminiscent of the old BioWare gameplay style, the old KOTAR.
Right.
Knights of the Old Republic. They've kind of made their own medieval lore here with this, with their thing. So this is the third Dragon Age game. But I never got the DLC. And the DLC was on sale.
How much?
$5.
For all of it?
Yeah. And it's normally priced at $30.
I might pick that up tonight.
So,
I think I got $5 on.
So, granted, when was the last time that I played this? A while ago.
Right.
A long while ago. I never went back to it. I haven't revisited it since I beat the game in early 2015.
Right.
But suddenly, I just beat the game I was playing. Could I relaunch this? Yes. Will I right now?
Yeah.
I'm torn. I really am. I really am torn. Because this game is worth it. This game is so worth it. And you know what? The only thing that that I'm hesitant about is because I never completed Dragon Age 2. Now, I have Dragon Age 1 Awakening, which is the expansion for 1 and 2, for the PS3. The problem is that my BioWare EA account for the PlayStation is not linked to my email address. It's linked to Silent Rob's.
Right.
We shared a PS3. For whatever reason, my PSN ID for those games links to his. And then my Xbox 360 account links to my PS4.
Huh.
It is messed up. So when I went to go into this, they have a little thing where you can make some of the choices that you made throughout Dragon Age 1 and 2, whatever, to try and to make it to where it's not just the base Inquisition
right
going in, which is fine. You can start the game that way. It's really only subtle world building.
Right.
Little changes here. Your original hero of Ferelden for the, I can't remember.
Hulk.
We'll see. There's Hawk. He was the hero of Dragon Age 2.
Yeah.
But your personal character that you created in Dragon Age 1 is not in this, but he does send a letter.
Right.
And decisions that you make. You can make the king to be Alistair, I think his name is. You can choose to make him king or not. Because he shows up in this game, and he's either king or not, and it's just subtle changes,
right?
And then there's changges with Morrigan if you romanced her with your hero, if not, it changes slightly, ever so slightly. But I was attached to that character; he was my dude.
Yeah.
And so when I went to make my Inquisitor, I wanted that. But now I've got those DLCs. I got three big story DLCs, and a few other slight ones that expand the story of this. And they're all rated pretty good. And I like this game enough to eventually go back to it.
See, that sucks because I have to start all over because I lost my healer.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I got halfway through.
Well, and that's the thing is that it has been so long for me, I might just start over. I'm going to start over anyway.
Right.
Because I want to refresh on the story. I want to rebuild everything. Maybe even make some slightly different choices.
Right.
I was mostly 100% in love with my choices. I love my romance choice. I love the way that I... Starting off, I was kind of confused on the story. Oh, cats are fighting.
They're fighting over your bag.
They're fighting over the bag.
And here comes the dog to break it up.
All right, you two.
Yeah, break it up.
Had enough. Come
he's
on.
The police dog of the house.
Come on, guys. He's giving me the puppy dog eyes.
Yeah, will you play with me?
We're recording a show right now.
In my giant ears.
But anyway, yeah, I wanted to bring it up. Now, here's the odd thing. I went into I went to go buy this last night or check out because I think it said that I saved like about $40-something, maybe almost $50,
right,
on off everything that I bought, which is only like three things, but that's really good. Because I don't really like to buy digital. And the only reason why I don't go out and buy the Game of the Year edition of this is because you just get to download codes anyway.
Right.
I want the actual on disc. It's like The Witcher.
Yeah.
Okay, The Witcher, that's on disc on the Xbox One.
Yes.
Boom. There it is. All done. And that's where I want it because if in 10 years, 15 years, you can't download those anymore for whatever reason, then you're kind of SOL.
Yep.
You know, so I want everything on disc as much as possible. So there really is no good way to do it other than just to bite the bullet and download them. And if they're on sale for $5, like the Fallout 4 season pass, that's $50.
Yeah.
And that was on sale for $25. Trust me, I was like rocking back and forth because I'm like,
I'm still waiting. I need time. I know that I need time.
Mm-hmm. Because you've got it now, but you just...
Yes. I just... Once that gate opens, there's no turning back. I've got to do it all.
You're listening to the Voice of Survival Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Nate Phillips.
It's starting to get warmer out. Me and Brett are like, we want a bass. We want some bass. We want someone else. So we're trying some, you know, asking people from school to come
jam.
Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. Sometimes they come back, sometimes they don't. And then we meet Austin Skeens, who at this point I kind of knew, not too well, but I knew him because I met him like just around Munster the year before. And he always did like this mic was, you know, like in Monsters, Inc., the slug lady that moves across.
Yes.
Like,
Mike Wazowski.
Yeah. He would always do a great impression of that. And it just left an impression on me because he's just super funny.
That's hilarious.
So he's like, yeah, I'll jam with you guys. I can't leave my house on weekdays, but I'll jam with you guys on the weekends. And we're just like, fuck.
Wait, can we get into that? Is that something we can touch?
I don't know what it is.
There was never any resolve. It was just the rules.
He just, because I guess it was great. It was grades first with his family.
Okay, I respect that. I mean, some parents, you have to take it to the extreme because that's just the way the kid is. I totally get that. Moving on.
He comes out on the weekends and it's a lot of fun. We're just like,
you're vibing
fuck
with each
yeah.
other.
Now it's three of us just making whatever. And we did that. And then summer came and just spent the whole summer doing that. We'd have the garage door open, just playing music.
Go.
Yeah. Just
fuck. Yeah.
Having like our own little songs, trying out different things and having fun more than anything. And just like doing that, then going and hanging out. Doing that, we're just kind of always together because we're just like really good friends, and then we're playing music that we love together. So we're just.
You defined the camaraderie of a real band. I had that with my first band. It's different, you know, when you get older to have that because, like, when you're kids, you need peers and like-minded individuals, and if you come up together, there's no greater feeling, really, genuinely. And it's like now I'm super thankful because I started my journey in music with Brandon Stone, who now is such a big influence and a part of me in the podcasting world, who really helped to make Journey into Comics Network and everything we have here what it is. So that camaraderie that you're talking about, I totally feel it. You're going everywhere together. You're listening to the same music together. You're absorbing everything together.
Yeah.
You're making moments that you to this day cannot forget. And there's those moments where you just look around and you're like, damn, I got some cool fucking people in my life and I'm really grateful right now, you know, and that's an awesome experience. So you, Austin, Brett, three-piece, you're starting to, the wheels and everything we're getting there.
Yeah.
What happens next? Is there any decision like, You guys know we could totally play a gig, the three of us. Did you try that?
I always like wanted to, but we just never really
didn't book it.
We didn't. Yeah, like, hey mom, can you drive us to this, you know, gigs? And then like, you know what I mean? But it's like,
yeah,
it was just like we didn't know. We didn't know who to talk to. We didn't know what to do. We wanted to play, but you know, we didn't have any.
It's a wild, wild.
The only access there was Battle of the Bands at school.
Oh.
And I'm going to rewind to freshman year real quick.
Sure, do it. Please do.
And I see Battle of the Bands for the first time with my friends at the time. And one of the bands on there was called The Censored. Okay. And it had lead guitarist Nick Blackstone.
Okay.
And I see him and he's wailing on the guitar, you know, doing his thing, wah and distortion. And I'm like 15, like,
holy
shit. I want to do that. You know, I want to be on there. And then they won. And I'm just like, oh, my God, dude, that looks so cool. I want to do that. And, you know, I'm making music, so it's like, should be cool. And so sophomore year, we didn't do it. We went there, and it was just like the same like feeling, like I want to do that. Then junior year comes. And I don't know, junior year was junior year. And I started playing with other musicians from school.
Just randomly? Because,
well, it was because, like, I got, okay, I'm not going to get into this story, but I'm just going to say, I got suspended at school.
Okay.
For a very dumb reason.
Okay, sure.
But when I did that, I don't know, it was just in, like, a fit of rage. Me and Brett got into a little, like, tiny argument that meant nothing, really. And okay. Then we were just like, I was just like, I don't want to play music. And he was like, fine. And it was just kind of like, I don't know. It was really kind of like, it's just kind of funny.
High school stuff.
Yeah.
When you look back at
it. It was just really weird.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know why it, but it was kind of funny. But, so I started playing with other musicians at school or trying to like play with bands. You know,
create something.
Yeah. And I do with someone who is part of the marching band, this drummer, and then this guy who played bass, who eventually played bass for Belladonna for about 2 months.
Oh,
Brandon.
Cass?
Brandon.
Oh, I don't think I know Brandon.
Well, his name's School Rock.
Okay.
In Neil's story, he mentions him.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
So,
I gotcha.
We get together, and I'm like, all right, I'm gonna sing, and so I sing, and you know, it's bad. The singing was bad. It is bad back then.
Okay.
It was bad, rough. But I was like, hey, someone's got to do it. So.
You do it until you're good, right?
Yes.
You're not wrong.
Yeah, that's exactly. Do it till you're good. So Battle of the Bands comes up. And there's tryouts. So you have to try out for Battle of the Bands. Only 5 bands max can get on. They play like, if you scored the most at tryouts, you play last. If you scored the least, you play first.
Whoa.
So it's like, okay. Because I'm like studying Battle of the Bands. I'm like looking at the other bands' little videos on YouTube. I'm really in on this, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay.
You're coming in with strategy at this point.
Yeah. So I'm really hyping this up. I go up there to try out. There's a, it's a 3-piece. We, at the time, we were called Throwback Thursday because I guess pop punk band names kind of.
I like it.
I guess.
It's not
wrong. I don't know. We weren't really, I don't know. It was just like, I don't know. Went up there, covered an Arctic Monkeys song.
Sure.
And a White Stripes song.
Cool.
I'm singing both.
Sure.
We get up there. We do our thing. I'm like, cool. Cool. All the other bands go. I'm like, cool. Wait till Monday for the results. I'm super excited. I'm like, oh, it's going to be so cool. I look. We scored last. And I'm just like, oh. Okay. And
but you made it.
Yeah.
Okay.
But only 5 bands tried out, so it was like,
oh, well, okay, it doesn't matter. Doesn't
but
matter.
I was like, okay, whatever. I can't sing very well. I'll get this girl, Sierra, who's dating Nick Blackstone,
okay,
to sing. I'm
sure.
Like, okay, cool. So I'm like, we got this. But then there was also dealing with the, there was like a curse for every Battle of the Bands band that played first, that opened. They just had technical difficulties. Like, all the bands that I saw.
Every time.
It happened 2 years in a row. So I'm like, wow. Okay, that's it. So I got to prepare for it.
So now you're really preparing and trying to get yourself ready for going on the stage. How does it go?
It goes. It's very funny.
Okay, it's so funny. Okay, sure.
We get up there, and my amp, after we sound checked too, because we made sure to sound check, my amp wasn't like turning on. So I'm just like,
Oh no.
And then we're starting to mess with it. It takes like a minute. And I'm just like, think about the time because you have 25 minutes. And I would go home and I would listen to the songs in a little playlist and time them to make sure that every song would fit well. So I'm just like super honest. I'm so like hyped about this. So it starts working. But then I was like, when it wasn't working, I don't know why. I started turning the knobs. I don't know why. Because it doesn't make sense.
So you changed your sound.
So I'm like, I'm louder.
Oh no.
So I was like, okay, we play the first song. And my guitar is also out of tune. Even though I double checked it to make sure it was tuned, I was like super hyped about it. I guess it just went out of tune. I don't know. But
the curse of the first band.
That's right.
It's happening.
So my guitar is out of tune.
You're too
super loud.
Finished
the first song. A couple of friends in the crowd are like, turn it down. So I'm like, okay, turn down. And then we're playing the rest of the songs. And then I borrowed Kes.
Okay, yeah.
I borrowed his guitar
okay.
to use for Come As You Are by Nirvana.
I love that song. Absolutely.
Because I had it was like a phaser or a flanger or something.
Yeah.
One of those better
it's
pedals.
The flanger effect.
Yeah. I bought that effect specifically so I can use it.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
And then, Kes is a lot taller than me.
Uh-oh.
So the guitar is like down here.
Oh my
you know?
Gosh. Was it difficult to play?
It wasn't too bad until the strap fell off. So I'm just like, fuck. You know, I'm like, okay, I go to sit down. I got this. I'm like, it's cool. I got this. You know, I got this.
Was that the finale song?
No.
Okay.
The finale song is even better.
Okay.
So we're going to do Whole Lot of Love by Led Zeppelin.
Awesome song.
And we're going to have this guy, Matt Travis, guessing on it. Okay. Because all the winning bands had a guest thing on it. Whether it be an instrument, but this guy was super popular at school and he was a really good singer. So I'm like, ha.
Got it.
Get him in. And he was a really good singer. So we're singing. He's singing. And then there's that part in the song, the solo. And, you know, it's like, it's guitar. It's the instruments hit two notes all together, and then it's just isolated guitar.
Yep.
Pure guitar solo. I'm practicing my ass off for this. I'm like so excited. I'm like imagining it all the time.
You're envisioning it happening.
Yeah. So I go to do this and I stick my left leg up on the monitor to look cool in front of all the high school girls in the front row. And the spotlight shines on me. They hear it. Boom, boom. I play. There's no sound coming out of my amp.
What?
Yeah.
Oh,
nothing.
No.
It's time for Brews with Dudes. Juicy.
Cranberries. What do we got here? Normally associated with a traditional creek. But in a kettle sour beer that is wonderfully intricate, balanced, fruity, and tart. That is my opinion, not what is written on the can.
I agree with that.
Do you believe me?
I've never heard of Distill.
I haven't either.
Did you grab anything from them that wasn't a sour?
Yes, I actually have a milk stout at the house that I will be bringing over for another episode. So,
sweet.
And I'm not going to lie, I did try one of those as well, and it was very tasty. So,
well, that's awesome that they're able to get opposite ends of the spectrum down.
I will say, other than the sours and the stout I got, they seemed a little boring. Just a couple different ales that I almost didn't get anything until I saw the stout and the sours. I was going to go for something else, but once I saw those, I'm like, you know what? Those actually sound pretty good.
I wasn't going to say this because it might offend somebody who's listening in Normal, Illinois, but...
Well.
You know, I'm not really surprised that they have a little boring flavors in Normal, Illinois.
It's just a little too flat.
A little too normal for my taste.
But these sours, though, these are fantastic. Don't get me wrong. I like it. Illinois's got some kickers.
I like it. I don't know if they had other brews that weren't in stock at the time that I just didn't see. But when it came down to budgeting, they were a little lower on the list. But I do like the turnout so far.
Was it probably somewhere in the... Was it a six-pack?
This was a four. The other sour was a four as well. The stout, though, was a six-pack. I ended up getting like two flats of beer, two six-packs, and the rest were fours.
Nice.
So I had a pretty good haul. My fridge is happy. It smiled when I came home. I'd never seen such a range of beer before.
Yeah, I'm pretty disappointed in myself. Last weekend, we went to... went to 450 North and I stocked what I thought was stocking up. And it's Thursday? So we're sitting here less than a week later. Yep. And I've only got two beers left.
To be fair, we did have Drunkastrophe.
We did.
And Brews with Dudes prior to that.
That was an unbelievably drunk podcasting evening. We definitely got lit up on the Brews with Dudes, but most of us were shirtless by the end of the...
We took our shirts off several times, but they always ended up back on, and then back off, and then back on. What's crazy is, like, I remember the next day being like, man, I could have got drunker.
Oh.
And then I listened back, and like, I'm like, I don't remember any of this.
I don't remember much of anything. I remember, was it Miranda's mom that had the hots for me at one? Was that who that was?
I think so.
Or her aunt or someone?
It was her mom.
They were live streaming.
Yeah, and I watched it a little bit.
I just washed my hair like the day before, so my hair was out and flowing. Yep. I was shirtless.
The camera view was like right on your back too, so we had good view of your hair.
It was a... It was a mess. I'll say that.
I did listen at work for a little bit. I was enjoying it while I was not able to make the festivities. I was listening in, and it was
awesome.
It was a good time.
We were really getting it. That was an all-star cast.
That really
was.
I
love having Dave on anytime.
Hi, Dave.
Are you out there?
Love you.
Dave unfortunately said he was busy all day. We even tried to get some D&D going tonight. And
he wasn't having it.
He's not free today.
It's okay.
That's right.
It's okay.
Dave.
We'll get you again sometime.
Say, we're about done with these sours here.
What should we knock into next? I know I looked at all the beers that you brought, but I didn't take it all in. I know there's an IPA. I know there's a stout, I think.
There is the Snake Oil IPA, which is probably going to be the next one.
That sounds about right.
And then after that, we'll get a little bit back into the fruity. We've got a... I brought the Mango IPA from Pipeworks, or it's a Saison IPA.
Okay.
And then I've got, what was it? We've got a Moroccan Coffee Stout.
Well, now that sounds good.
It is tasty. And then last but not least, we got the big doozy. We got the Death's Tar. Mm-hmm. And even the can is intimidating, honestly.
It makes me feel as though my entire planet is about to be blown up just for the point of making a point. There's a princess on a spaceship somewhere looking down at us getting ready to drink this beer. Before it explodes.
Oh, man.
So I got a question for you because, you know, I've been on the show before and you guys know I'm not much of a beer person.
I'm not either.
Like, I'm not very knowledgeable.
I do this show not only to be a guest on here, but to learn more about all the different types of beers. It's my journey
right
into beer.
Oh, he said it.
Oh, shit.
He did the thing, guys. Cool.
We try to say it at least once every episode.
Somebody out there is wearing like one shirt that just says "Journey into Beer."
And if they're not, that should be our thing.
It will be. Oh yeah. Once we all start doing like shirts and stuff.
Oh yeah.
Like the Brews with Dudes is gonna have like "Journey into Beer" on the back.
It's gonna be a mess.
Oh, that'd be a
We've already started thinking about it. Like, what is the? It's got to be something crazy. I love the logo and stuff that we've got now.
Yes. I can't wait to start doing Podcastrophy merch.
It's going to be
Nate and I were talking about that last night on Podcastrophy episode 17, which
dun, dun, dun.
Dropped today.
Oh, wow.
Well, yeah, I recorded real late.
Damn. I feel like this is I think we're two episodes ahead right now. I think we're trying to kick some ass. I think we're doing a New Year's episode too.
Oh boy.
Like a pregame to the party.
Oh boy. I'll be here.
We're talking about going in on a bottle of Johnny Walker Blue. You gonna get in on that?
How much?
It's gonna be probably $20 a piece.
Okay,
you but it's a $250 bottle of whiskey.
Oh shit!
It's like
it's the bee's knees.
It's supposed to be some really good scotch. Like
so, if you guys are both in on it, that makes five of us that are in on it. So we are about halfway there.
Yeah, I was gonna say I would be down.
Yeah,
everyone else totally doing in. It down.
It's where were we at? Rookies.
Yes.
And he pulled it out. We're like, how much are the shots? He's like, only $30 or something.
$30 for a single.
For a single shot is retarded.
Yep. Hey. Ounce and a half on the rocks, $30.
Yeah, it's
ridiculous.
It's big boy stuff for sure.
He was trying to tempt me because every time I'm at Rookies, I drink Johnny Walker Black, and they give me a good price on it. But $30 was not a good price for a single on this drink. So.
Hey, how much for a bottle of Johnny Walker Blue? How's your left kidney holding up?
Not good.
All right, well, that wasn't the magic pour. We're going to need some more. Sorry, Dongo.
It's okay.
This has got a really amber color to it. This is the snake oil from Four Hands Brewing. It says it pairs well with spicy food and grilled beef. An India Pale Ale. Giant skull on the front of it. Brad, this one's actually from St. Louis, Missouri.
Is it?
It is.
Oh, man, how did I not notice that?
It's quite all right. It looks like it is a 6.5 ABV. It just says the same shit over and over again on the top. Why would you waste the ink on that?
Yeah, it does. Two different colors. All around the top of the can.
Same fucking thing. Okay, so I kind of stole that one from Brett. We didn't need Brett to describe every single beer. He would get bored with it, I'm sure.
The design of the can, though, I like the matte design.
Me too. I really do.
I've always liked matte colors.
I will say, in my defense, I was about 15 minutes away from St. Louis at the liquor store I was at. My parents live very close to St. Louis, so it's local to my dad's location.
Yeah, he's in the southwestern tip of Illinois, and when we looked on a map, it was like, it looked almost like a suburb of St. Louis. It's like really, really close.
Like St. Louis almost like went into Illinois itself. This is good.
That's good.
That is a very
nice,
tasty
crisp
brew.
Taste to it.
The color is deceiving. The color made me think it was going to be incredibly bitter, but it's not really
nice
that
smooth.
Bitter. Yeah.
It was a really smooth. The liquid itself felt very full.
Yeah.
Very heavy liquid, I would say.
Hmm.
Flavor. A little light on the flavor, I thought.
Yeah,
I'm not getting what the IBUs are.
I'm not getting a very crisp taste like you said, but definitely enjoyable.
I could definitely sling one or two of these back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing, like with me and sours, I can only have one sour, and I've got my fill. Something like this, it's not too high on the ABV. You know, it's not too bitter, so it goes down pretty easy. I could definitely put a couple back and probably be a little lit afterwards, but it'll be all right.
Definitely more than a little. If I drank that whole four pack, it would probably make me feel silly.
Just plain silly.
Just a little bit out of the loop.
This does have a really good taste, though.
So Edgar Allan Poe was born on January 19th of 1809 in Boston, Massachusetts, to Elizabeth and David Poe. However, Poe didn't really get to know his parents as his father left his family and his mother passed away from tuberculosis when he was 3. Poe was then sent to live with John and Frances Allen in Richmond, Virginia. John Allen was a tobacco merchant, and needless to say, they were very well off. Poe went to the University of Virginia in 1826. However, John and Edgar did have their differences about money, so when Edgar didn't receive enough funds from John to cover all of his costs of living, he turned to gambling to try to make up the difference, which didn't end as well as he had hoped, as he ended up in debt. Poe then dropped out of his university within a year. Poe soon entered the military under a false name, Edgar A. Perry. However, his life change didn't diminish his love for writing, as he self-published Tamerlane and other poems. He did put by a Bostonian instead of using his real name, which was kind of funny, a little interesting. Poe ended up getting out of the military 3 years early under the condition that he went to West Point Military Academy, though within a year he was kicked out of that as well. So we're kind of already seeing a string of bad choices leading to less than welcoming outcomes. In 1831, he was completely disowned by John Allen, so Edgar went to live with some relatives in Baltimore, where he also met his first love, who happened to also be his 13-year-old cousin, Virginia Clemm. So that's a fun fact. Moving on from that, Poe was still writing, and he was average in that time. He was a horribly starving artist, like most were, and he definitely wasn't as famous as he was today, but he was known. Poe was making just enough to survive, and publishers were definitely okay with publishing all of his work, but they were a little less eager to pay him. Things started to look up, however, when Poe got a job working as a critic for the Richmond newspaper. Poe continued to publish books such as The Tales of Grotesque and Arabesque, which included that horror style which we are so well accustomed to, and it's pretty much what most of us know him for today. He also published The Murders in the Rue Morgue, which a lot of people say is the start of the detective fiction genre. Poe reached his peak of fame when in 1845 his poem The Raven was featured in the Evening Mirror. However, regardless of all the attention Edgar was receiving because of this, he was not making any extra money. All in the meantime, his wife/cousin was dying from tuberculosis, which, if you recall from about 2 minutes ago, is also what his mother died from, so that's fun. In 1945, Edgar Allan Poe had a lot of love drama in his life on top of everything else. It was rumored that he was flirting with another poet, Francis Osgood, and he also had an admirer, Elizabeth Ellet. Poe didn't want anything to do with Ellet, however, he did not want her as a lover, a friend, he did not want her in his life whatsoever, he's disgusted by her entire existence. So Ellet was very jealous of Osgood and threatened to expose the letters between Poe and Osgood and all this other crap. She was just nuts and jealous and over the top. Ellet herself was sending Poe many love letters, however, she obviously was not getting any responses from them, because he just straight up was not fucking interested. So he had returned all of her letters, and in vengeance, Ellet decided to publicly humiliate Poe and said that all of these love letters were written by Poe himself, to send to himself. With all of this crazy drama, Poe's wife died, and all of this started him into another downward spiral. On September 27th, 1949, Poe moved to Philadelphia for an editing job where almost nobody heard from him. He decided to just drop off the face of the fucking earth.